SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and I am just seeing something. Mike Welch is going to join us in about an hour. Sid Fernando, I hear you in the background, I think, yes?
I'm sorry about that, Steve.
No, it's fine. It's good. It's good. I wasn't sure. No, I'm fine. I'm hearing
I saw that on Twitter.
Mike and the Maxfield news that a condylar fracture, and so
tough break.
It's interesting that, and I haven't seen the specifics yet, but feel badly for Brendan Walsh and Team Godolphin. They just can't. They really can't get a break when it comes to their. They've tried a couple of different methods, Sid. To reach the Derby and compete, and they seem to have adjusted their approach, but it's going to have to wait, obviously.
Yeah, it's such a a terrible shock to have such a cult come back as he did from some issues he had. And then to hear this news today, and then he joins Nadal, and career ending for Nadal as well. And then, of course, the withdrawal and the time needed for Charlatan with the chip that's got to be removed. So, there are three of your spring horses that look. Obviously you're out for the classics, which gets back to what you said earlier in the year. This year is an asterisk year, and you're going to have new players by the time the Derby rolls around. You got the Belmont coming up, but it's going to have a new cast, obviously, as we go down the year.
Well, and this happened at Keeneland, coming out of a breeze, and I just retweeted the Marty McGee piece, and we'll hear from the post-surgery, Dr. Bramlage doing the, doesn't sound like it's displaced either, so... Sid, when it comes to the resumes of horses, we talked about this a little bit last week when it came to the Nadal situation. How much of an incomplete resume, works against a stallion prospect, and of course being either a Coolmore or a Godolphin prospect, or being associated perhaps with the Windstar, Spendthrift, some of the big powerhouse stallion operations, they're going to get every chance to be a success at stud, but we talked about this very topic. Is Maxfield's is Maxfield's resume? I mean, how attractive is it to, let's say, if he ends up retired out of this?
Well, you know, as with Nadal and Maxfield, both of them got grade one wins, which will help them, you know, when they go to stud. If you take a horse like, you know, the horse that's come out firing this year with his first crop, not this time, same type of story. He didn't even get to three. Wasn't even a grade one winner. So when he went to stud, he was priced, you know, attractively at $15,000. So it's going to, you know, if people, connections like a horse enough to put that horse in stud, they'll have to price him appropriately in the marketplace to get the mares. And none of that, of course, will affect what they end up doing as stallions down the road. It's the idea of marketability and getting the mares to give that horse a shot. There have been plenty of horses that, you know, haven't had major race records that have gone on to become major stallions. Of course, the biggest off the top of my head right now, Danzig, 3 for 3, not a stakes winner, and became one of the most influential of all stallions. So it's again, two different things. The horse with some talent, pedigree, sire, family might become an excellent stallion, but it's a matter of, as you point out, are they going to be associated with a big enough outfit and priced well enough that they're going to be able to get the mares to help prove them down the line.
Well, and on that topic, I mean, that's actually before we, you know, we talk about what happened at Santa Anita on Saturday, let's use this segue to day one results from the sale, and specifically, Not This Time. Who's got the first two early winners on the racetrack. I don't know. I doubt that that's central necessarily to, you know, some of these purchases, but $200,000 buy, a $75,000, and a third one at $10,000, and some of the other, you know, first croppers, that Air Force Blue sale, Cassie buying four Coolmore, you know, showing support, $400,000 for that colt that breezed 20 and 4, hip 209 yesterday, and unprompted, Joe Applebaum earlier said he threw in a plug for Air Force. For Air Force Blue as well. He said that he was impressed with the breezes.
And, you know, Coolmore timed that sale. They're high on this horse, Air Force Blue, first crop of Warfront. I mean, a son of Warfront. His first crop is two this year. And Coolmore came out today and had a winner in Ireland by Air Force Blue. Blue out of grade one winner Marley Bone by Unbridled Song. So, you know, they're pretty high on the horse. It's one of their stallions anyway. They feel he was one of the best two-year-olds they've had at Ballyboyle. So it's not surprising.
I made mention earlier too, Sid, just kind of, you know, my, you know, the way, you know, that I look at those results day to day. You know, you obviously expect the Candy Rides, the Into Mischiefs, the Tappet, the Munnings, etc. You have the Ghost Zapper sale or session topper at $750. And I will mention, by the way, in response to that conversation earlier with Joe Applebaum, who is J.A. Goods on Twitter, I asked Tom Ventura how the sale part went online. And Tom reports that they had bids on 50 different horses over the course of the day, and nine of them sold through the online system out of, I think, 130.
Yeah,
and he said it went. Yeah, he said it went smooth as can be. He said there were no hiccups, and he thinks that you know, there'll be some momentum and you know, with the comfort level, you know, having been achieved. When it came to some of the other notable sell-throughs, Brody's Cause, Sid, sold everything that was offered, no RNAs, and I always think that that's a positive indication, you know, that they were priced right, the RNAs were reasonable. He's a $7,500, you know, stand-in nurse, and, you know, there were a lot of 30, 40, 60, you know, 80,000 sellers, and that's usually a pretty good indicator of, you know, that people are liking what they see.
Yeah, no, that's really a great point. Also, he's going to ride on some of the coattails of Not This Time as well. He's by Giant's Causeway, isn't he? Brody's Cause?
Yeah.
Yeah. As is Not This Time. Same connections also, but...
with Dale, yeah.
Yeah, and the Albaugh Family Trust. But Giant's Causeway, the Stallion line, is doing so well in Europe with Shamardal, who died in April of this year. He's had his son Lope de Vega, who's a top stallion in Europe. So the line is really kind of flourishing through that branch, and that now with Not This Time, you know, showing this excellent start this year. Giant's Causeway, of course, also deceased. It helps other stallions buy the same stallion, and so it's not as surprising when you see that, those kind of stars kind of align, so to speak.
Couple of so, other
go ahead.
No, just the first crops are always, you know, we always are watching those immediately, and a couple of Ironicuses, and Frosted sold well, Mishawish with a pair, and I noticed one name I gotta bring up, and I thought it was a pretty distinguished day one for Twirling Candy. Had a 200, a 180, and a 175.
Yeah. And he's really become super popular. In fact, I wasn't even able to get a good mare to him this year because he booked up so fast after the year he had last year.
Hmm.
He's really become a stallion steed that's rising quickly in popularity among breeders. There was a little price gap they were able to take advantage of, their stud fee. They're selling well, they're running well. So he's, you know, if he were a stock, that's a buy. He's got a big run on him right now. So that's really good to see, because he's one of those stallions that was oversubscribed this year. And in previous years, it wasn't really a problem getting to him.
That's interesting. And
yeah.
And it's not as if what's funny about it is that he's done it, it seems, with, you know, I don't want to call them meat and potatoes. That's not fair. He's done it with... generic's not the right word either. Just sort of middle of the road. Yeah, they're just some. He's just getting nice steak horses. The one, you know, the last summer was, you know, Concrete Rose was tearing up the turf. She's sidelined, right. But you know, Finley's Lucky Charm was a help. Gift Box, who kept you know, staying on as well. Trophy Chaser, Morticia. Speaking of Rusty Arnold, Morticia, mm-hmm. as well for Rusty and different kinds too. I mean, on the main track, short, long, turf, dirt.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's made him extremely popular. And, of course, you know, some of those horses that you just talked about, look at them, you know, grade one winners. So when you start getting, when you start clicking like that with multiple grade one winners, graded stakes horses, people pay attention. And like I said, it's in this game, it's you have your... first crop sires, you have your proven sires, but then you can find horses in the middle that are fast movers, like a twirling candy that suddenly everybody seems to be on him, and that helps when you're trying to, as a breeder, trying to find the right horses to get to, and he's a perfect example of that. A horse has been around. Been doing his thing, people are starting to notice. He stands at Lane's End, of course.
Yeah, 40,000, you know, kind of a sweet spot, you know, not too expensive, and, you know, reachable.
Yeah, and he was 40 this year, but previously he was 25.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and... been a lot of that said in the city, a lot of no doubt. Before we talk about Honor AP, speaking of Lane's End, a couple of other notes. I got a. I've been trying to get John Sakura, who's been busy all week. I've been trying to get John on because. There's just been a parade of success for Hillendale, and what a unique set of circumstances this weekend. Kitten's Joy gets a you know, an English classic winner, and the you know, Violence is on an incredible roll. Speaking of, you know, of stallions that are resurgent and, you know, have regained momentum, he's out of control. This Volatile is about as exciting, I suppose, you know, comparisons are readily made to Mattoli, but Cantheros as well, and just a lot of nice things going on at Hillendale.
And it's really important to stress the accomplishment of Kamiko, Kitten's Joy's son, who won the 2000 Guineas, because there's a kind of a little bit of history here. The last American sired 2000 Guineas winner, American Stallion, that is, a base stallion, was King Mambo with Henry the Navigator all the way back in 2008. And since then, there has not been an American sired stallion as the 2000 Guineas till this year. And Kamiko, of course, also the last U.S. bred, North American bred winner of this race since, again, Henry the Navigator, King Mambo's winner. So it's really quite an accomplishment, Steve, because, you know, there was a divergence after years of American sired horses and American bred horses, North American bred horses, winning European classic races. It stopped. After, you know, a streak of beginning in the 60s and continuing through the 70s and 80s, kind of filtering it out, sputtering through the from there on in. And now we have this horse winning 2,000 guineas, which is really a massive accomplishment for Kitten's Joy. And I can't stress that enough. In fact, in the last few years, there have only been a handful of American-sired European Classic winners. Off the top of my head, I think the last one before this was Blaine's Philly Senga in the Prix de Yann, the French Oaks, a few years ago. So, you know, that's quite an accomplishment. And I just wanted to put that in context.
Yeah, we don't see it, you know, not that often, but you know, Kitten's Joy, I think one sold yesterday, and you know, when it comes to this year's international, some of the international activity, we aren't sure how, you know, how productive that side of things might be, but it's always notable. We always, when we're watching these international events, always easy to root for, you know, this kind of a circumstance. And in fact, we'll turn our attention for next week to Royal Ascot, the Wesley Ward contingent getting ready to go. I think Marcus Hirsch wrote yesterday, I think there's seven Wesley's going to send. Turn our attention, Sid, to the result of the Santa Anita Derby, and we talked to John Sheriff's Monday, which was a lot of fun. The advancement and really sort of an anointing, I would guess, of Honor AP, and considering what news we just, you know, delivered with Maxfield's season ended, really feels like Tis the Law and Honor AP are now the your classic front runners looking toward September.
Yeah, it's a horse that everybody expected to arrive, and he did it, you know, quite nicely. I rarely comment about yearlings when I see them at the sales, but, you know, I got to say, I was at that Saratoga sale, and I was so impressed, I actually put a tweet out at the sale in 18 about this horse. He was named, I think, Hollywood Hero as a yearling.
Mm.
But, my God, I mean, I think you were at that sale. But I was in the back ring. I saw this horse, and I could not get my eyes off him. You know, he was that attractive. And it's just so funny because I just been introduced to George Krikorian just a few minutes earlier, and then I'd wandered away. I saw this colt, and I hadn't realized at the time that he bred that colt. But I mean, he looked—he actually looked like a storm cat, but in his coloring and the flashy bay, just a beautiful, you know, horse that had some really defined musculature that you don't see in yearlings. But the thing that really caught your eye about this horse, Steve, was the way he walked. I mean, he just strutted like he was the king of the hill, you know. And everything around him looked plain. And then he made $860,000 in the race and in the sale. Of course, first crop of Honor Code. The thing with Honor Code, one of the last ones of the great AP Indy, was that, you know, when he went to stud, one of the things that people were just a little hesitant about him was his running style, you know, that come from behind horse, instead of that speed horse that people expect to give you some obvious speed in an offspring, there's some hesitancy sometimes with a horse that runs from off the pace on a regular basis. And it's ironic that this horse is running style, you know, so perhaps it takes a little longer to show it, but, you know, what a great advertisement for this Honor Code's first grade one winner to be Honor AP. And this horse is a complete outcross pedigree-wise. I know he's from your favorite. We've talked about him several times on the show. But he's a complete outcross. He's going to be a great stallion prospect. He's going to make the breed a lot better looking, too.
Well, and the mare, Hollywood Story, she just continues to just amazingly produce not just runners, but good runners. And, you know, she herself was so classy. And
one of your favorites.
Absolutely. Well, the best part of Hollywood Story was latching on to her as a 2-year-old and getting to know John Sheriffs, and then being in a, you know, in a position when Giacomo showed up the next year, kind of being hip to, you know, to John Sheriffs, even though he'd been around for quite a while and he had those horses for 505, and, you know, it didn't take, you know, these 2000, you know, the aught era successes. Manistique was a tremendous race mare, and
certainly was.
But I really was kind of keyed in to Sheriffs by the time, you know, Giacomo was starting to improve, and, you know, that performance that he turned in off the board. Or maybe third, I guess, in the Santa Anita Derby behind Buzzards Bay. Buzzards Bay, General John B., Giacomo, and Wilco, 1, 2, 3, 4. That sort of helped 4 weeks later at Derby. And running into that's one of my favorite stories. Running into Mike Smith in front of Wagner's, and I ended up on an impromptu basis interviewing Smith and writing a piece. Smith expects big effort from Overlooked Colt.
Excellent.
Well, because he had said that Giacomo was the as many holy bulls that as he had gotten on. Mm-hmm. He said Giacomo was really the first one that under him felt like, you know, similar to Holy Bull, and plus he was, you know, he was plugged into the reason Smith was there was, you know, they had a workout and you know, before they had left California. Anyway, I somehow got plugged into the whole Giacomo story between Hollywood Story, Giacomo, Sheriffs, and Smith. And here is, you know, here's Smith and Sheriffs again. And boy, stylistically, this horse seems to have the right everything. You know, you look at that female family of Hollywood Stories. Not enough is made about Dynaformer's presence in there as the broodmare sire of Wife for Life. You get plenty of stamina, Never Bend and Swaps. I mean, this thing, this is just a as you say, I mean, a picture perfect pedigree.
Really, it really is. And, you know, it gives his sire the right horse to start off with. And, you know, hopefully this colt has a great career, and, you know, with his pedigree and the fact that he's a total outcross, the way he looks, he is, whoever gets this colt is, whoever ties him up is, you know, he's going to get, hopefully they'll get a really important stallion prospect down the line.
Just poking around through there, you know. There's so much. You know, it's funny. So there's so much familiar in this in this pedigree. I mean, here's the mare that has just thrown one good runner after another. And when you talk about Honor Code, you know, for those that need reminding, out of Serena's Cat, and you know, everything that, that goes with Serena's Song's legacy and Serena's Tune, Serena's Cat, it's really interesting, actually. There's also some of my favorite things in here, Sid, like the presence of a plugged nickel mare, Rose Park, Wild Rush's dam. You got some names you don't see all that, you know, Key to the Mint, who we, you know, of course, because of plugged nickel. And, yeah, she herself being, she, the key to this, is, of course, is when you talk about the Outcross, she was a, you know, she was a three generation Outcross. Khalid appears 4x5 in her pedigree, but in modern pedigrees, you know, she's going to bring a lot to this party.
Yeah, yeah, she really is.
Well, Sid, I guess on the 3-year-old front, we're gonna tread water here for a week, and when we talk next, it's going to be Belmont Week, sort of.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll come to you from Belmont.
Yeah, and of course, 'Tis the Law is the big gun there. So,
and
could be
Barkley,
a big story for Barkley.
Exactly. That's missing from that's the race that's missing from his Triple Crown pedigree, and it seems like all systems are go. He worked the other day. Worked terrific.
Yeah.
Have you talked to him?
I haven't talked to him recently, but I've been chatting with Robin on Twitter because she posts the incredible meals that she's cooking for herself and Barkley every night, and they actually inspired me to cook a few times. But yeah, I will talk to him soon. I've actually kind of, he's the one colt I've been kind of following through the season, and getting some insight from Barkley, and, you know, fingers crossed everything goes well, and I'll be rooting for him.
Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and you can work with Work Thoroughbred Consultants at 510-490-1111. And at this point, we hit June 10th. I don't think any. I certainly hope that nobody is still waiting on any late falls. But I did see one where Irish War Cry's dam, Irish Sovereign, she had a very late foal the other day. Yeah, like I'm going to say like the beginning of the month or last week, she had a. So she'll miss this coming year, obviously, but I would think. And they try to maybe reset her, but I'll see if I can't, you know, dig that up. I forget who, Mrs. De Tomaso, you know, she's got a non-traditional approach.
Right.
One of her favorite parts of conversations about Irish War Cry was reminding people that she didn't pay the top price for Curlin.
That's right.
She got Curlin the last year before the price went up. She would say that. I didn't pay. That was great. Well, Sid, I appreciate it, and we'll talk next week. And you got it. Sid Fernando.
You got it, buddy.
You got it.
Thank you.
Let's take a bottom of the hour break quick, because we got to get two people on the line. We're going to get both Lauren Weiss and his son Andrew after Lauren scored a seat last week in HC. Back after this, Mike Welch in a little bit, and Seth Merrow as well.
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's dancing behind movie scenes, behind the movie scenes. Sadie Rani, she's the one that keeps the dream alive. From the morning past the evening to the end of the life.
Back at the races. Just off with Sid Fernando and back to another conversation about a weekend success, NHC qualifying, and Lauren Weiss joins us from Toronto, and he's got his son Andrew as well because they're working together. But Andrew's gonna leave the nest. 21st birthday is coming up, and he'll register for the tour and look for his own seat or seats. First of all, let me welcome Lauren back to the show, and congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. Great to be here. It's been a long time since I've qualified, and I still can't believe it. And while we were on hold, I was listening to your advertisement for University of Arizona, which is where I'd like you to tell Andrew to go for the racetrack program.
Why not? Isn't he? Where is it? What is he doing now, Andrew? Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Morning. I'm at University of Guelph for business right now.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. But you could.
It's not,
you
could not as go... good as Arizona.
No, it's not.
Did you think about it at all? I mean, when you were finishing up with C, I can't call it CJEP. It's not CJEP in Ontario. It's
well, they go to grade 12 here, and mm-hmm. And then right to university. And Guelph is a great school for agriculture and horse racing. Horses that are really sick end up in Guelph, but unfortunately, Andrew's in a business program.
You know, this is very funny, Lauren, because virtually every parent you could think of would steer their son or daughter away from the racetrack, and here you are. Pushing him to the racetrack.
My parents steered me to the racetrack. We bought a farm when I was 10. We bought it from Frank Stronach, a small horse owner, and that's what started our racetrack. We owned horses with Frank, and we bred and we raced and we rode them. Having Andrew interested in horse racing is wonderful, and his mother, his grandmother, I think you know the term schlepping nachas. when he wins a bet or helps me with a tournament like he did on Friday, what could be better than this? Andrew loves it probably more than me. And which is hard to do, but I love it. I've always loved horse racing. I love all parts of it. I love meeting people like you, Steve, and Pete, and all the great guys that we've met through the tournaments online. But even the ones that are at the races are so much better. That's where we've got to know, you know, people like Alan Schaefer, Ray Arsenault, Monty Engler. I was going to say, Andrew has been taught by, he's very lucky, I don't know what could be better, but he's been taught by some of the best handicappers in the world, including Ray Allen, Paul Sherman. I was trying to think before the call, like Mike Labriola, Tommy Massis, Monty, Brian Troop, the great Ken Zellin, and many others. Like, if Andrew doesn't win the NHC, I'll be very disappointed.
I was going to say, Andrew, that is a lot of pressure. Andrew, talk about this is an interesting an angle because I mean I've seen you with the veteran Toronto and you know other all the horse player community that you guys rub elbows with, the Gulfstream mm-hmm. during the winter and then, you know, during the summers at Woodbine. Mm-hmm. When did you start seriously, you know, handicapping and you know, trying to, you know, gain a foothold in comprehension of what the PPs meant?
Yeah, I think it was over the last couple years I started getting more and more into it. Actually, one of the first times, one of the times I spent most on the racing form for the first time was, like, during Gulfstream's pick six when it was at, like, 4 million. I think I came pretty close to getting the, the single ticket jackpot payoff for the 4 million at
Andrew had a 70-1 shot that day and missed on a 5-1 shot, and he would have been the only winner. Just so you know, Andrew's very happy. He won $500 that day, even though he almost won $3 or $4 million.
Yeah, small consolation, but that was one of the first times I got really interested. But yeah, over the past couple of years, I became more and more interested in like reading the past performances and learning about it, and yeah.
Steve, just to give anyone who's listening a guide to creating a son who loves horse racing or a daughter, I took Andrew to the track when he was in his stroller. And in the beginning, it was just like popcorn or candy or whatever at the track would make him happy. And then in the very early days, before he started reading the form, I would make sure he would win. He never lost. Andrew, would you agree? You never went out of the track without winning money. So I should probably write a book about how to create a racetrack fan, because Andrew loves it now, and he's got his friends into it, and they come to the track. They love the buffet at Woodbine. Hopefully we'll get back to that soon. So there's so much about racing. It's more the social part that we love. I mean, the winning is great, and I've got on involved in many tournaments, and Ray and Alan and Ross Gallo, we're all involved in the Pegasus tournament, which basically Ray created at Gulfstream, and we love it. It's just it's a hobby, but we've met the greatest people. I love the NHC. I'm so excited to go back. But even when I don't have a spot, going to the NHC, there's nothing better. I love Vegas, but it's hard not to love Vegas. And I'm hoping this year, you know, things will be back to normal by February, or more normal.
Wow, I made that same kind of reference. I mean, the fact that we've got 6-7 months for them to, you know, kind of smooth things out, ideally, and getting you back there is terrific. Even though you come and hang out otherwise, two questions on that front. For you, Lauren, how has your approach changed, if it has at all, in terms of trying to qualify and, you know, the circumstances around it? And then after that, Andrew, I'd love for you to address the unique part of your involvement is, you know, that being aware of contests at an early age and how it affects, or, you know, how you separate a contest approach versus your bankroll play, when you're at the track, any other day. So Lauren, talk a little bit about, you know, how much time you spend against qualifying and, you know, how that has evolved.
Well, one thing, I love the online, because with work and with everything else, it's very hard to get to the live tournament. So being able to play in a feeder, and by the way, on Friday when we won that contest, and the Friday is a $75 contest, which had 428 people in it, it's pretty hard to win any contest. It's almost impossible. But to win in that contest is even more exciting, because there's so many people. I think they gave away 3 spots. And we actually won the entry on an $18 feeder. So we got in on the morning, and that's kind of been our policy. Like, we would play only in the finals if we got in on the feeder. So now we've got an entry in the NHC, a trip to Vegas. They give you $500 U.S., hotel, most of your food, all from $18. And now we have a chance to win first place, which I think last year was 800,000, and yep, has been 800,000 for a few years. And our friend Ray Arsenault won 800,000. And just like Ray has said many times, like, where can you win $800,000? Like, and we, I mean, not, you know, the odds are stacked against you, but just to have a chance to win $800,000 on an $18 bet, where can you do that? Like, you could maybe do it on a lottery, but here you're involved, you're having fun, you're picking horses. So we do a lot of Andrew and I play a lot of the online. We're looking forward to the live tournaments. Last year in December, we were driving to Florida, because we usually drive to Florida at Christmas time. So I saw there was a contest at New Orleans. So Brian Troop, Andrew and I got in the car. We drove to New Orleans, which is a bit of a right turn from, you know, off the highway to Florida. And we went to New Orleans. We played the tournament. We didn't do well, but we had a good time. And then we drove to Florida after that. So I'm looking forward to getting back in the car and driving to hopefully tournaments in Saratoga or Monmouth or wherever they are. We look forward to that. And that's really our approach to this. Just have fun. Keep the investment relatively low. We love the angles Ray and Alan and others have taught us over the years. I know you've heard Ray talk about his angles. He's got some of the best angles, and we use them constantly. They don't always obviously win, but when it's your day, like it was on Friday, you know, it's worth all the time and energy and pain for waiting for that day to come. Just like Tommy Mathis winning Hong Kong the other day over $1 million. I mean, yep. You know, it was his day or his night or morning, but I believe, you know, you just have to wait it out and not push too much, and eventually, if you're doing the right thing, it'll happen.
You're the second player to reiterate or to drive home the point that the buy-ins, the small feeders, are just, you know, the simple and cost-effective approach. You know, nothing wrong with, you know, with weekend. Not everybody can play in the feeder system and you know, can take time on, you know, midweek to play in. But earlier, Eric Gilotta, same thing. That's all he does is play, you know, $18 type feeder events to get in, and he's qualified. I think he said now it's 4 times in the last 6 years. So
yeah, it's a wonderful way to play the races. And I call Andrew, my son, Mr. Feeder, because up in, you know, we've been in a lot of contests, but you know, we haven't obviously won the big one for a long time, but we've won many feeders, and it feels great to win a feeder, but it's hard to win both. But it was. It makes it all even more exciting when you get in on off a feeder.
Andrew, talk a little bit about the parallel track that is really required. I talk about this all the time because I found it impossible to separate and mentally run on two separate tracks, a contest approach and my, you know, my day in, day out play. And then when I was struggling trying to get into contests, you know, 10 years ago, it started to affect my regular play. And so I backed off the contest. I wasn't going to, you know, that sort of made me walk it back. But you're starting from, you know, from scratch, essentially. I mean, being, you know, being a teenager and now in your early 20s, talk about separating, you know, what you initially learned to make it work in contests.
Yeah. So for the contest, I learned that it was very hard to win playing chalk or anything, you know, under like 5-ish to 1. So the big thing was learning, for my daily play or if I'm doing pick 4s or 5s, to that I need to take some of the low prices where contests, it's very hard to win and have any of those. Like, just kind of separating the two approaches, one with a lot of chalk, not a lot of chalk, but you have to mix it in because otherwise you'll probably get knocked out. And then the contest, you need a lot of long shots.
Especially when there's a big group, right? If it's a big contest, like 400
or... Oh, yeah, sure.
Sure.
Yeah, like in the... yeah, just... if you have... Like, watching the free contest or my dad play the 165 one, you know, if you have a 5-to-1 shot, like 50, 60 people will have it, and you'll get... and it won't move you up, where if you have like a 20-to-1 shot, maybe 2, 4, or 5 other people will have it, and it'll move you up a lot more.
Certainly, you know, when we talk to Ray, Ray Arsenault is the perfect example of the player that is going to need to, you know, to get a couple of long shots home at any given point. And it's amazing, actually. And of course, Ray, you know, that's not an unusual approach, but, you know, finding them and being able to find more than, you know, just the occasional. I mean, it's nice to get one that, you know, gets you home in a contest. And mm-hmm. we see it almost every weekend. But when you're going to show up in Vegas and have to, you know, have to parlay 3 straight days of your approach, I mean, it mm-hmm. it's more than luck when you're picking out cap horses.
No, for sure. I've been watching, or I've been following the NHC the last like 2 years, and it seemed incredible to me how many like long shots these guys are picking every day to get to the top of the standings.
And we always listen to your show when we get back from Vegas, Steve. And you've always got some great people who give a lot of great information to help find new angles.
The game is constantly changing, and whether it's new products and innovations that are helping, you know, helping players, whatever kind of tools. Just the other day with Ryan Flanders, we had, you know, he's got the developing Trip Notes concept. It's amazing that as long as the game has been around, and I suppose technology is a big part of these innovations, but for as long as the game's been around, it's amazing how seemingly often we're treated to, you know, something new to help us understand the game better and make it easier to find winners. I mean, it's amazing that way.
Yeah, it's a great game because we love, it's like a puzzle, right? Putting together a pick six or a tournament, I look at it like a puzzle. Every day it's a different puzzle. And it's exciting when you can finish the puzzle. It doesn't happen too often, but we, you know, that's probably what makes us even better. That I think the last time I qualified was 2017, and it's not for lack of trying. I've played in so many contests, but to qualify after a few years makes it even better. And Frank Sorensen called me after the win, and he, you know, Frank Sorensen, captain.
Sure. In Captain New Frank. York.
Yeah, so Frank's a great guy. We go running with him in Vegas in the morning, and some others come with. And Frank said, anyone who knows me, Lauren, would know that Andrew helped to win that contest. So that's my reputation, but I'm very proud of Andrew, and I love to spend time handicapping and going to tournaments, and I look forward to NHC and being at the same table. And the other great thing about the NHC with the new Bally's format is there was so much room that you could bring guests. And, you know, I've been a guest for many years. Now it's nice to be able to sit at the table and eat the food too.
I love it. I love it. Did you guys spend the same kind of time that you typically do in Florida this winter?
No, we actually were there in December, and we would have normally gone back in January, February. Well, I think the last time we were there,
I can't remember. Right?
Yeah, Pegasus. So in January, we would have gone back maybe once or twice. So right now, being in Canada, we can't go back, but hopefully we'll be able to go back soon. You know, we'd like to get on the road and drive to one of these tournaments maybe and go to Florida as well. But We haven't been there. Like everybody, we're kind of staying at home right now.
No, exactly. And you know, we'll also wait to see about how Woodbine with its contest, especially in September. Hopefully, by September, things have loosened up to the point where they can have the terrific Woodbine Challenge, which you know has become a kind of a mid-major event.
Yeah, we've loved the Woodbine tournaments, and we'd like to. Ray and Alan and I wanted to get involved and try to help promote them. So we're going to reach out to Woodbine as soon as things quiet down a bit, because Woodbine contests are great, and Americans can come up here, hopefully, and you get like 35 cents extra on your dollar. So right now, it depends on the dollar, but it's a lot of Americans come up to these tournaments.
That's how I ended up spending 10 years in Montreal. I I got there and my dollar was worth $1.38, and I was supposed to be there 3 days. I spent 10 years.
Yeah, no, Woodbine's a great track, and they put on a great show for the tournament. So hopefully they'll organize it, and we're hoping Woodbine will consider going to online with their tournaments too, like we can with Horse Tourney and Horse Player. And ExpressBet, which we can't play in Canada. We can't have an ExpressBet account, but we'd love to play on ExpressBet.
Well, you guys are confined to HPI, right? You've got HPI is an exclusive, and I know some people. I know it frustrates. Not having a choice frustrates people. Period. In New Jersey, the people are frustrated that they've only got four New Jersey bets, and not that it's not a good platform, but it, you know, people are entitled to a choice, and you know, being able to pick the service that's giving them the best package and the best offers.
Yeah, like rebates and all that stuff.
Sure, exactly.
We're hoping that HPI will move to online, especially now. It would be a great thing to have the contest online.
Absolutely, given the situation. I didn't realize that it was that they were hamstrung on that front.
They haven't done it yet, but we're hoping they will. And we'll see what happens. You know, the whole thing is we've been very lucky as horse racing fans to have basically the only sport continue during this whole pandemic.
That's right.
So we feel kind of lucky. It's been a great distraction. It's always, horse racing to me is always a great distraction. Like no matter what's going on in your life, you know, if you focus on horse racing, go to the racetrack or play online, it's a wonderful way to spend time, especially if you get lucky once in a while.
There you
which you know is hard to do, but I think it's worth the effort.
And obviously, the Weiss family enjoys it, and Lauren with a new trip to Vegas, a chance for Andrew for you. When's your birthday coming up? Next couple of weeks.
Yeah, this Saturday, then I can start playing in my name.
So you won't see, Steve, you won't see Lauren Weiss anymore at the top of the list. You'll hopefully see Andrew Weiss. But, I love the, playing with Andrew at these tournaments, the way the Wolfsons have done it over the years and so many others. It's a great thing to be able to have this common interest.
Mm-hmm. There's no doubt. And that's, you know, the game is most typically passed down that way, friends or family. So you guys are a textbook case. Well, I'm very happy to see Lord when I saw your name and we're going to be
Steve.
Very happy for you guys and Andrew, we'll get you on as a when you qualify on your own. We'll get another conversation going.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
Congratulations, Lauren and Andrew Weiss, and continued success, and look forward to I wish I could say we'd see you at Saratoga, but...
Well, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know what,
fingers crossed.
What the plans are. Yeah, you never know, but keep well, and love your show, and keep it going, and we will see you soon, hopefully.
Absolutely. The Weisses, father and son, Lauren and Andrew, everybody. Let's take a break here, a little past the top of the hour, actually quite a bit, and Mike Welch is going to join us. Want to hear about this race today at Gulfstream. And you've got the two bean cone horses. I got to check the scratches. I see where Ron Nicoletti just put them out and maybe see if anybody came out of that race. But you've also got Chivalry. This is a big deal in the middle of a week. And considering the, you know, the rapid drop off here between Maxfield first passing Belmont and, you know, then Charlatan with the ankle. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, who kind of jumps in. excuse me. I also just retweeted the note that Governor Morris is going to go bluegrass now. So Pletcher with two Belmont runners, but Governor Morris heading to Keeneland. So the door is open, obviously, for, I mean, 'tis the law, and I suppose after the performance last week of Tappet to win, and Mark Cassie saying that he was under consideration for the Belmont, I mean, now, obviously, he kind of bubbles to the surface as... you know, as one of the alternatives to Tis the Law. But, boy, Tis the Law heading, you know, to odds-on territory pretty quickly, 4-5, a week from Saturday. Let's take a break. Mike Welch and Seth Merrow over the next 45 minutes at the races.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Pletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, Naira, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success.
Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at UA.